Glad you're along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And to begin our show, we're going to take a look at Wisconsin's homegrown American Folklore Theater and a couple of guests for you to talk with us about it. They've got a great production coming up that starts this coming Thursday. It's called Main Traveled Roads. We'll certainly talk with them about that, but we'll also talk about the theater itself and certainly invite your questions and comments as we move along. One of our guests today, Kay Chrisman, with me in the studio, has been managing director of the American Folklore Theater since 1998. Kay, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to be here.
It's a real pleasure to have you with us. Also with us by phone, Jeff Herbst. Jeff has been artistic director for the American Folklore Theater since 1993. He's worked on over 30 original productions with the company, including one that I found hilarious, Guys on Ice, Lumberjacks in Love, Belgians in Heaven, and Boon Dance. And beginning this Thursday, August 30th, as I said, in the Ephraim Town Hall in Door County, American Folklore Theater will produce the world premiere of Main Traveled Roads. And we'll find out about that as well as we visit with Jeff and Kay. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you so much, Larry. Good to be here.
Yeah, really pleased to have you with us today. And tell you what, Kay, maybe you could give us a little history of the American Folklore Theater. How did it get started?
Well, American Folklore Theater originated in 1990. Actually, it originated 20 years before that, Larry, as Dave Peterson, who was a UW professor at the time, created a show, and it eventually was on the stage at Peninsula State Park, and he continued to write shows for American Folklore Theater, and they were produced in the park, more of a concert type of show, until 1990, when he passed it on to our co-founders, Fred Alley and Fred mm-hmm. Heide and mm-hmm. Gerald Pellrine. And Jeff, perhaps you would like to add to that.
Yeah, well, Dave Peterson was a kind of a remarkable individual who was part of Robert Gard's founding idea, Wisconsin Idea Theater Company in the 60s, and it was Dave's idea to sort of take a lot of the American folklore traditions, especially Wisconsin folklore, and translate them into shows that would be accessible and entertaining while maintaining the, you know, the great heritage that we have, especially the musical heritage, because Dave is quite a musician himself. And he got a couple of really key individuals involved with Heritage Ensemble in the early days. One of them was Fred Heide, who is one of the co-founders of American Folklore Theater, and Fred Alley. Those guys really worked, Fred Heide in particular, all through the 70s with Heritage Ensemble, and Fred Alley joined and was working with the company all through the 80s. I myself performed with that company when I was still in college in 1985. And then when they started to shift a little bit under Dave Peterson to doing more than just musical review format shows, and the guys wanted to start experimenting a little more with theatrical form, they decided to do a couple of musical plays. And at that time, they didn't really ever have a director. So Fred Alley called me up while I was living in New York and said, would you like to come out and direct for us in 1988? And that was the first time that I was involved with the company here in Door County. And that, again, was while it was still Heritage Ensemble. And I directed for them in 88 and 89, and it was then that the shift started to happen when Dave said that he was thinking about retiring and really wanted the legacy to continue, and the theater was changed from being under the auspices of the University of Wisconsin to an actual not-for-profit theatrical organization called American Folklore Theater.
And it was kind of in the early days, it was sort of a low-budget production, but with some pretty high-quality shows for the for having to change clothes sometimes in the mud and everything else.
Yeah, you know, Larry, our motto has almost always been style defined by limitation, because that's, you know, I think most theater companies feel that way, but when you're a grassroots organization and you really are trying to be a populist theater company that's affordable for families, you know, you really try to keep it tight, the purse strings as tight as you can.
Yeah.
And certainly part of our mission, Larry, is always to provide shows that are appropriate for families and are family affordable, and that's just foremost for us. When we say homegrown Wisconsin theater, I think it's interesting to note that both Jeff and Fred Alley are from Mount Horeb, and Fred mm-hmm. Heide is from Green Bay, so they really are Wisconsin-based.
And some great shows over the years. And Jeff, which shows stand out in your mind?
Well, I think there's no question that the one that has the biggest brand name recognition has to be Guys on Ice. And that show started as, in some ways, almost a tongue-in-cheek joke, because it was 1998 was the sesquicentennial, 150-year anniversary of Wisconsin, and there was a lot of grant money floating around. The state was interested in making sure that arts organizations, you know, were exploring the history of the state and able to have some money to do some presentations and whatnot. And, of course, a lot of people applied for those grants. And Fred Alley looked at me and he said, well, you know, if we're going to apply for it, we should, you know, try and get a little mileage out of it if we can and make sure we've got a show that'll, you know, that'll stick around longer than just celebrating the 150-year anniversary. And he said, well, I think, you know, there's cultural relevance in guys sitting on the ice fishing in Wisconsin. So we wrote a grant. Fred actually wrote a grant, and we got some money from the state in conjunction with doing a co-production with Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And that was really how Guys on Ice got born back in 1998, and as you know and have stated, it's been around since and has really entertained and I think informed a lot about what American Folklore Theater has become for people in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's a wonderful production, and I've seen it more than once.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. We always say, Larry, you know, if a wife can get her husband to go to the theater and she brings him to Guys on Ice, he'll want to go back again and drag her along. So,
and, you know, Guys on Ice has played from coast to coast and from north to south, really. It has played all over the nation without any changes in the script and been so well received every place.
Yeah. Yeah, people always ask us, you know, well, how does all that Packer stuff translate to places like Texas and New York and California? You know, and I always give the example that there's this wonderful little show called Greater Tuna, which is all about a little town called Tuna, Texas, and it's just a two-man show, much like Guys on Ice, and of course it's very particular to that little Texas town and all of the mores and, you know, the culture there, but that show has played everywhere in the United States, and they don't change a single word. You just identify with the people, I think, is what happens.
Well, let me ask you a financial question relating to that. Is when it plays all over, or do you folks receive any remuneration for the playing?
We don't. When we produce an original musical show, we have what's called subsidiary rights for the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. But then after that, we don't receive anything. And that subsidiary right that we receive is a very small amount. The author and the composer always own the shows, Larry.
Theater is a real strange beast in that way. The writer is still king in theater, and I think it's not necessarily a bad tradition. That's shifted some in recent years, and I think little theater companies are getting smarter about making sure that they have production agreements that allow for them to share a little bit more if they've especially been the incubator of these projects. But it's still a you know, it's still the writer's baby when you get down to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another show, I think, Lumberjacks in Love, played a critical, important role in the whole scheme of things with the American Folklore Theater.
Yeah, well, Lumberjacks was kind of a breakout for us in 1996. You know, it was really kind of the first full-scale book musical that we sort of tackled in a way that went on and got some recognition at Milwaukee Rep and had a nice run there. I think it was at that point in 2000 is actually when it played at Milwaukee Rep, and from 96 to 2000, we started to generate really what became our kind of signature format for developing new plays, and we tried to bring them through a good process and making sure they were developing correctly. And part of that mission was to go back and visit some of the works that we had written under stress. Because honestly, Larry, when I started directing for the company, well, 91 was the first year that I was here full-time as a director and actor. It was 93 when I became artistic director, but I actually started sort of in the position in 91. And every single show that we put on that stage from 91 all the way up until, I think, 2000, never had an ending before we went into rehearsal. So, and that included Lumberjacks in Love in 1996, and we knew we were going to have an audience in 4 weeks, and, you know, so the, you know, the fire was under us, so there was no choice but to get something written. But it was after 96, and I think after Guys on Ice, really, the success, we started to think, well, you know, we could go back and revisit some of those shows, including Lumberjacks in Love, and that's exactly what Fred and James Kaplan, the composer, did with that particular piece when we had a chance to do it at Milwaukee Rep. Is we had a nice extended rehearsal period. Fred was able to do a really nice rewrite on the book and get it tighter, and James was able to write some new songs. So that's become part of our mission, too, is to make sure that we're always looking back and taking care of the works that we've created from the get-go.
And what's the process like now for new productions? What process do you go through?
We have a really kind of detailed process. Of course, it starts with getting the writers on board, and because we have an unbelievably kind of particular need for the Peninsula State Park venue where our big outdoor summer theater is, we don't have, and this might sound very strange, but again, it's sort of style defined by limitation, but we don't have the ability to do an intermission in that space because, frankly, we don't have the bathrooms to handle 750 people if they all decided they wanted to take a break at intermission. So we do one-act plays out there, and we have been able to extend them to as much as an hour and a half, but that's about as long as, you know, one's butt can sit on those hard benches. So, you know, you just keep kind of working with what you've got. And so anyway, it starts with the writers, of course, and we want them to be able to write material that's obviously appropriate for American Folklore Theater. We always say that we try to have material that will be meaningful and entertaining to a child as small as two or three, and, well, maybe not quite that small, but sometimes, and all the way up to, you know, his great-grandmother of 85, if that's mm-hmm. generation is still alive. And I think we've been able to do that. So our writers have grown out of that tradition because they all started within the company. They knew our audience. They wrote to our audience. They understood the venue. And since Fred Alley died in 2001, and he, of course, was one of our primary writers. The two shows you've mentioned so far, of course, were Fred Alley creations. At that time, of course, we had to scout around and start to figure out how to fill that tremendous void. And I've struck up a really great collaboration with Dave Hudson and Paul Libman, and I know we'll get to their names as the program goes on, because they wrote the fall show.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, those guys now are getting an understanding of what our needs are, too. So you commission these writers now. We actually have money available, which we never did in the past, mm-hmm. to commission writers because, you know, writers need to make a living, too.
Sure.
And we're really happy that we're able to do that, and I think that's one of the most critical things that we can offer to our writing talent, is to make sure that they know they have some money up front, and they also know that they can fail. I think, the idea that you can fail usually means that you will succeed. But if you feel like you've got to succeed with everything that you write, then I think you're more likely to fail. So just by being able to provide them that security, I think helps. And we take that then from the commission, where the writers just go off into their own little writing land. They, of course, have given me a treatment of whatever they're proposing. We've usually talked through kind of the character, the size of the piece, making sure all those things are sort of in line. And then once they get a draft written, we take it through a reading process, usually multiple reading processes, and then we get it into a workshop, usually on its feet, so we can see how the piece moves. We get actors involved. We hire them. We spend at least a week or two workshopping the piece, getting the music learned, seeing what works, what doesn't. Then we pull it apart again. The writers go away. They do rewrites. We do another table read, or we get it back into a workshop. And then we finally, if we feel like the piece has developed through all that and has started to generate some excitement up here, then we'll decide to do a production.
Wow. It's a detail, but it sounds like a great process, a great way to do it.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's interesting because some of our board members, and I know Kay, too, in having gotten involved with American Folklore Theater, the process is really is often the exciting part for those of us involved with theater, because you get to see something grow from literally just an idea. You know, somebody just says, well, why don't we write a show called Packer Fans from Outer Space? And everybody kind of looks at one and goes, well, it's a great title, but what the devil is it going to be? You know, and then suddenly, you know, you got a couple of writers, and they're coming up with all these fantastic characters. It's, you know, it's weird, and it's wacky, and it's fun, and it's totally original. And then, you know, we all get to sort of work on the whole process of how is it going to work on every single level? How is it going to work, you know?
Wow. And wonderfully creative.
Yeah, it is creative. It can be, of course, incredibly stressful, but that comes with the territory, you know. I mean, you must go through that just in producing a show every day.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell you what, Kate Christman is one of our guests today, Managing Director of the American Folklore Theater. Jeff Herbst is the Artistic Director of the American Folklore Theater. We're talking with him about the theater. We haven't even gotten to the production that's coming up, but I'm having a lot of fun talking with him. Certainly, if you want to join in with your own question or comment, maybe you sat in on one of the shows this summer, perhaps, or maybe one of the other shows as well you want to comment on, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Wisconsin's homegrown American Folklore Theater now with Kay Christman and Jeff Herbst. Both Kay is managing director and Jeff is artistic director for the American Folklore Theater. Really glad to have them along. Again, if you want to join in with your questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Kay, you know, we haven't talked much about how the program is. In the first place, you're in Door County. You're in Door County. And tell us, you've got a summer program and then switch to a kind of a fall program.
Yes, right? We do. Our summer season has really always been our primary focus, but now fall is too. But our summer season is in an outdoor amphitheater in Peninsula State Park in Fish Creek, an absolutely wonderful seating setting. Our theater seats about 800 people, so we are not a small theater. During the summer, we do three shows in rep over the course of a 10-week period. We start the middle of June, and we just ended last Saturday with an absolutely fantastic season. The weather was certainly on our side this summer. We didn't even have mosquitoes, Larry. and we just had three wonderful shows. We premiered another one of Dave Hudson and Paul Libman shows, A Cabin with a View, and it was so well received. It's just a marvelous production. So I'm sure that you will see that again. Our theater, you know, is under the stars. We are truly outdoors, but it's just a magical setting, and it's fun to see families walk up the path and enjoy musical theater at its best.
And then you switch, and the fall production actually starts this Thursday.
It starts this Thursday, and we move into Ephraim Village Hall. We've done productions at Ephraim Village Hall and Gibraltar Town Hall, but this fall we're just at Ephraim Village Hall. That seats about 180 people, so it's a smaller venue for us, and we create our own theater in that space. But we're looking forward to a marvelous 8-week run of Main Traveled Roads.
And Jeff, maybe before every one of our lines is full, but let's talk a little bit about Main Traveled Roads a little bit, and then we'll go right to the phones from there.
Sure. Well, Main Traveled Roads is a piece that was adapted from stories by Hamlin Garland, a Wisconsin writer, and his stories are about American farming, really, and about the struggles with the land that happened around the 1890s is when this piece takes place, actually the late 1880s. So it's a time, before any of the invention of all of our modern technologies. And yet it's interesting with that piece that I was born in South Dakota, and my folks were raised on farms out there. And my uncle still farms in South Dakota. And honest to God, it's still year to year he's wondering if he's going to make a living doing it. So it's a piece that still resonates even these 120 years later, because it's really about people struggling with the land, how the land affects their lives, and how it primarily affects their relationships and the decisions that they make. But it's a lovely piece that was adapted by Dave Hudson from several of the stories interwoven, two main stories that get told, one of them really quite delightful and lovely, and the other one is a little more heartfelt and, a tougher one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that people will find kind of remarkable about Hamlin Garland is, if they see this piece or read the stories, is how modern his sensibility was and his daring, in a sense, in tackling some themes that even today I think some of us would consider sort of vanguard in their notions.
And the show starts, as I said, on August 30th, which is this coming Thursday. And then what are the normal times and so forth that...
We'll have shows every night but Tuesday through October 28th, Larry. So we do shows at 7:30 most nights, and then on Saturday and Sunday we have 4 o'clock matinees. So it's an ambitious, long-running season, but it's always supported well.
Well, let's go to the phones and talk with Benjamin next from Manitowoc. Benjamin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm... Yeah, I've been to American Folklore Theater my whole life. I'm an urban lumberjack. I love American Folklore Theater.
Thank you.
Me and my brother, we used to go in the winter when you guys weren't open and do your shows in the foot of snow.
I love it.
I hear that a lot. You know, the thing, my nieces and nephews grew up with American Folklore Theater. I have a nephew now, the oldest of the bunch, who just turned 16, and he was literally a baby when I did my first season with the company. And every one of them now has grown up with the theater company. And like you, they would have the tapes, which we used to be able to provide for our audience members, and they would memorize those shows, and they would sing those songs, you know, until they drove their parents crazy, I think. But
we used to go on long vacations, and my parents said, we could listen to one show in each state. That's all we wanted to hear.
Ben, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And you know what? There's another caller from Manitowoc, April. So let's go to April. Hi, April.
Hi, I'm Benjamin's mother. I wanted to tell you, my son has a shelf in his room. He has a picture of Fred Alley and him when he's 4 years old. 2 weeks ago, he added a Liney's beer can signed by Doug.
Oh, good.
So he also needs something from Jeff and Doc. We also just dropped my 17-year-old off at college, and I made sure the last thing he unpacked that he did not know was there is an AFT sweatshirt. It's on the bottom of his pile, and it'd be the last thing he gets from us.
That's really something.
Yeah, you're making Kay tear up here.
Yeah, I tell you.
Emily, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. Well, those are great calls. Cheryl in Green Bay, we'll turn to you. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the show. I love American Folklore Theater.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a question. The first show I went to, I'm a transplanted Wisconsin. I'm actually from Indiana, was Malarkey. And I have been every year since. And I wondered, but it was Malarkey was so beautiful and meaningful to me. I don't think I've seen it repeated. And
no, secondly,
I'm wondering, you know, I love everyone you have in the cast, but I really love Karen Mall as well, and I felt so sad when she moved on to explore other possibilities. Have you ever thought of having some kind of alumni show where you call back, or maybe just for a shorter period of time, some people come back to visit for a few weeks to do some of the shows that are no longer with the theater?
Yeah, the idea of having people back, of course, is one that we always try to entertain, and we do have a number of people that return. We've started doing, in the past couple of years, a show called Northwoods Nightcap, which is an after-show show, usually a couple times a summer, and we've had a number of alumni come back for those special performances and do their thing. And often, you know, the thing that they've been doing since they have either moved on from American Folklore Theater or been back and forth between American Folklore Theater and other things. So I'm hoping we'll be able to continue to do that. As far as bringing back old shows, there, you know, as Larry said at the very top of this show, we have over 30 original productions in the past 17 years and counting, and it's going to keep going that way, at least as long as I'm involved. So there's always a desire to bring back shows that we think will do well and will still have meaning. We have constantly wrestled, frankly, with how to bring back concert shows, which is what Malarkey was, because once we started doing these book musicals like Cabin with a View and Lumberjacks in Love, we found that people just flocked to those in a way that they weren't necessarily willing to do for the concert shows, especially if they were being offered at the exact same time in repertory. And so finding a way to in a sense, have those bigger shows subsidize the smaller shows is going to be something that we'll have to continually look at. Mm-hmm. Malarkey is a lovely show. It's all Irish music, and I have very fond memories of that show because Fred Alley and Fred Heidi and myself went to Ireland to research it, and we had never done a trip, the three of us together, before, and it was just such a fantastic trip. I turned 30 years old on that trip, and I remember hanging over the cliffs of Mar, just singing to the top of my lungs all this Irish music that we were being exposed to, and we brought all of that experience back home with us and put that show together, and I think that's maybe why it resonates with you, too, because it really came from a personal place.
Mm. Thank you, Cheryl, very much for calling. Ross in Door County, it's your turn. Hi, Ross.
Well, good morning. It's a great show, as always. I have a very simple question. I'm a budding playwright, I guess, and I would be interested in submitting a possibility. And for consideration. I was wondering how I would go about that.
Well, you are certainly free to look at our website, and you can email us your show idea. And that's how I would start if I were you, is just email me a treatment and say, you know, what it is that you're interested in writing about. If you have something that's a little more developed than that, then that's good, too. You can also just mail something to us at our post office box, P.O. Box 273, Fish Creek, Wisconsin. You know, the thing about show submissions is a lot of times people are, and you've been to our shows, I take it.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so you kind of know what we need in terms of what we present in the park. So that's really critical to keep in mind if you're serious about writing something for American Folklore Theater. But I am willing always to at least look at a treatment that somebody wants to present, and then I can either guide you if I feel like it's something that's appropriate for us, or I can say that it wouldn't be the right thing for us. So feel free to pursue those avenues.
And what's your website?
Folklorethe.com.
And theater is spelled R-E.
Yeah, R-E.
So folklorethe.com.
That's right.
Thanks, Ross. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's take some more calls. By the way, you can join in as well if you have a question or comment here as we talk with Kay Christman and Jeff Herbst about American Folklore Theater. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Pete in Green Bay, I believe you are next, so let's go to you. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
Earlier, I heard mention that you try to write the show for people of all ages, and I had the good fortune with my brother and my mother, who was in her mid-70s, to go see Guys on Ice in the Sturgeon Bay Third Avenue Playhouse a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And my mom, who'd never stepped on the ice in her life to fish, just laughed continuously through the show, as well as my brother and I. It was a terrific evening of entertainment.
Oh, good.
And what makes it so memorable as well, too, is about 4 months previous to that, my father had died unexpectedly, and it was just so heartwarming to see my mom for the 90 minutes or 2 hours finally laughing and smiling again.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
And the snowmobile suit song and dance, unforgettable.
Now, for those of you who haven't seen the show, what he's talking about is the boys celebrate the whole idea of a snowmobile suit, and both of the characters wear snowmobile suits throughout the show, and they have a number in it called the Ode to the Snowmobile Suit, in which they sing about the splendors of the of that garment, and in the middle of it they do a dance routine that includes all of the functions of the snowmobile suit, including the velcroed pockets and the zippers and whatnot. So we had a lot of fun coming up with the zipperography, if you will, for that particular number. It was really fun.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I'm looking forward to seeing what I can find for other shows, and if I ever see Guys on Ice again, I'm bringing a carload.
Fantastic. Love to hear it.
And we will be at Third Avenue Playhouse again this fall with a short run of The Bachelors, which was written by Fred Alley and James Kaplan also. And that'll run in October. So maybe you want to watch for that.
Yeah. And Doug Manchesky, who you saw in Guys on Ice, will be in that show too.
And that's October 4th through the 14th?
Correct.
Yep.
Third Avenue Playhouse in Sturgeon Bay?
Thursday right. through Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Thursday.
We have the audacity to compete with ourselves, Larry.
I'm looking at this thinking, why are you competing with yourself? Oh, that's great. Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I have a CD of songs from Main Traveled Roads.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about playing at least part of one, Creamery Man, maybe?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
It'll just take me a second here to put it in and set it up. Let's see here.
That particular song is about Ed the Creamery Man, who is one of the main characters in the second story of Main Traveled Roads. And he's a delightful character. I don't know if the setup in the song, I don't know if it exactly... Yeah, the song does describe who he is, so you'll get a sense of him within that. And his the person that he ends up being romantically involved with is Nina the Dutch Girl. And I think a lot of people get confused. The vernacular, the Yankees, so to speak, translation of Deutsch, which is German, was Dutch. So this is not somebody who's from Holland, but this is actually a Deutsch girl, a German girl.
All right, well, let's see if I've got it up here.
Creamery. Creamery. Creamery man. Up Molasses Gap comes a wagon. North Star Dairy's got a brand new man. Handsome, yes, no, the tongues are wagging about that fella filling up each can. One thing about that boy is for certain, he's good at talking to the women folk. Yes, that driver's real good at flirting, and the girls, they flirt right back, and that's no joke. And the gals say, fellas say they think I dress too fancy, but the ladies, they all seem to disagree. Bachelors, they need to be sharp dressers, and that's why I'm such a sight to see. Green suspenders, bright blue trousers, and a red checked shirt. Ain't no chance the gals won't notice me. Ain't that right, gals? Well, up Molasses Gap, all the parents, well, let's just say that they're a bit concerned. Not so long ago, they were youngins, and they've not forgotten what they learned. They know that young men who are single,
so single,
well, they tend to have certain things in mind.
Yes, they do.
So when they hear the North Star wagons jingle,
jingling, jingling, jingling,
they pay their daughters a little closer mind. As they all say, creamery, creamery man.
Oh, that was great.
Isn't that fun?
Now, Larry, do you want to know a little bit about that demo?
Yes.
That is Paul Libman, who is the composer of that show. And Paul Libman is a Chicago writer, and for years he did advertising jingles, including some of the most memorable advertising jingles we've ever heard of that are still in use, like two scoops of raisins in a package of Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
Oh, man.
That's Paul Libman's little lick. But anyway, Paul Libman has this fantastic home recording studio. I've actually visited him a couple times in Chicago, and it's just phenomenal. To watch him work in there is something. You know, for anybody who's in that kind of producing, that sort of thing is, I don't know, it's miraculous is what it is. Anyway, that demo, every single part on there, including the piano and all those voices, were all done by Paul Libman. So every single, he layered and layered and layered and layered until he got that thing ready for a demo CD. Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, it's fantastic, and I love the song. What an upbeat. Oh,
yeah.
It's just fun. It's fun to listen to, and that's one of the songs?
Yeah, that's one of the songs from the show. Of course, in the show itself, which, you know, we're currently working on, it was interesting for me to just hear that because I haven't listened to the demo for a while since I've been in rehearsal, of course. And now I have two women backup singers for that, and the two verses are sung by two different guys. And of course, the piano is a different. It's a grand piano, so the sound of it is, you know, it's all now realized in the way that Dave and Paul, you know, intended for it to be on stage. So it's quite fun to hear the difference, you know, between the demo CD and the full fledged theatrical production.
And there are a lot of songs in this production.
Now, interesting about this particular piece, it has, just this past spring, it won the Richard Rodgers Musical Theater Award. And that doesn't necessarily mean much to many people outside of the business of writing musical theater. But that award is a really prestigious award given by a panel of experts in the field headed by Stephen Sondheim. And these boys, Paul Libman and Dave Hudson, have won that award now twice. And they won it for Main Traveled Roads, which really gives it a stamp of approval in a sense and real encouragement by leading musical theater writers in America. So,
And we're just delighted to be the first producer of that piece.
And bragging rights here, we decided to produce it before it won the award.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a wonderful piece. Mike in Ellison Bay is with us, so let me get Mike on here. Mike, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to thank American Folklore Theater for, I believe they are responsible for bringing musicians such as Eric Lewis, Chris Irwin, Karen Mall up here to Fishstock Music Series.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it's just wonderful to have that kind of talent call Door County their second home.
Yeah, we think so too. And when you talk about Eric Lewis is one of the premier flat pick players in the world. He's won a bunch of awards. He makes his home in Memphis, but he really considers now Door County his second home, and I think he feels really encouraged and supported in his career as a musician because of people like you who enjoy his talent and go to see him at all the venues in Door County when he comes back. And Eric is one of the people that came back and played at Northwoods Nightcap for American Folklore Theater this summer. He also has been in American Folklore Theater's past two fall shows, Goodnight Irene and Fish and Wishel, the John Prine show. And Eric has also been a pit musician for us out in the summer theater for a number of years as well. So I'm so happy to hear you bring up his name. And, of course, Karen Mall was with us for years, and Chris Irwin, too.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for calling. And Kay and Jeff, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to Main Traveled Roads. It's running August 30th through October 28th at the Ephraim Village Hall. It's going to be a lot of fun. Judging from that music, I can't wait to hear the rest.
Well, we hope you come see it, Larry. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Larry.
And again, your website is folkloretheater.com.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
All right. Thanks again. I really appreciate you being with us. Kay Chrisman has been managing director of American Folklore Theater since 1998. Jeff Herbst has been artistic director for the theater since 1993. And they produce some wonderful, wonderful productions. And I tell you what, we'll have them back, and I'd love to play some more of that. I wish I could. Tell you what, though, we are going to switch topics and talk with you about climate and weather coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.